to put them during the session. All right, so who's next?
Anybody? I am.
Go for it, Paula.
Yeah, well, for starters, I have a celebration that I have a cousin who's 80 years old in Indianapolis who has the virus and has had a really rough time for the last couple of weeks. But today she posted on Facebook that she's much better. She'd gotten up and washed her hair for the first time in a month, she said, and had done some dusting and cleaning in her bedroom. So,
I know not to overdo it.
Yeah, well, yeah, you can't tell her that. But anyway, so she's turned the corner.
Oh, good.
Her daughter lives with her, and her daughter tested positive as well, but has not had any symptoms yet. So that's...
You may not.
Yeah, right.
You know, there was an interesting thing I saw somewhere yesterday that they had been testing pregnant women. Like, somebody came down with... one of the women in the delivery room came down with it. So then they're like, oh no, we better test everybody. And so they were testing all these women who went in for labor and delivery. And it was some huge percentage of them that had no symptoms and had the virus. They tested positive. So, and they said, well, if that's an indication, right, of the general population, because there's no reason pregnant women are any more susceptible than anybody else. So of all the asymptomatic people, it was some large percentage of people. So I have to look up those numbers, but you know, probably a lot of us have been exposed, have the antibodies. A lot of people have it and don't have symptoms.
Yeah. 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 Well, I tested negative, but I'm still trying to get rid of the cough and the ear congestion. So, and it's 5 weeks now this weekend. Yeah.
You're doing the C and the A and all the things.
Yeah.
That...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. So it's whatever it is, it's different from anything I've ever had in my life, really. So, yeah.
And you're not having shortness of breath?
No, I did not have any shortness of breath, and I did not experience any of that heavy type of chest feeling either. Just the horrendous dry cough that never became productive. I don't know that I've ever had a cough that didn't become productive at some point, you know, and this never has.
Never did.
You know, and I even gave in and got some of that horrible cough medicine, you know, that's supposed to suppress cough as well as be an expectorant, and that never helped anything. Mm. So I only did that for a couple.
You know, there's a couple of things. Slippery elm. Have you been doing any slippery elm?
No. I'm
staying. Slippery elm is phenomenal for dry cough.
Oh.
Because it's so demulcent. It's so moisturizing.
Yeah.
Right? So I would do some slippery elm. Just make a tea, whatever your favorite tea is, and put some slippery elm powder in it.
Yeah. Steph wanted me to stay away from slippery elm because of its, it actually.
FODMAPs, whatever, but you know.
Encourages the bacteria if you've got SIBO. So she doesn't like it in small intestine. Yeah.
Right. But you can gargle with it. I'll tell you an interesting story about, and it's a sad story, but actually a good story about slippery elm. One of our students in ERC years ago, her mom was at the end of her life. And she said, I don't want any heroic measures. I don't want anything. I just want to die. So don't drink, feed me, no IVs. I don't want to drink. I don't want to eat. I just want to die. But her mother it was difficult because of the dryness in her mouth. And so she asked, was there something she could do to just make her more comfortable without nourishing her? And all she did was she would put slippery elm solution goop in her mouth, swish it around and spit it out. And it just helped her become, because it helped with the dryness, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe you just want to do it, swish it in your mouth and then your throat, and then spit it out like a gargle.
Yeah.
Just to help support that. And then it doesn't go down into the intestine.
Right.
You know, plantain is another one. Anything more shallow, anything that's the muscle.
I've been doing plantain and calendula was what Steph had recommended that I do.
Yeah. They don't get as slimy though as slippery elm, do they?
No.
So, I mean, you could try that and gargle with it. The other thing you can do is this, I love this stuff, this throat spray from Herb Farm.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I use this, you know, if I feel like I'm getting a cough or cold or something, but I also use it when my throat is so dry from speaking for 3 days mm-hmm. at a live event.
Right. Yeah.
And it does help.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another option for you.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And it helps if it's a sore throat because it does have a little bit of, I don't remember what, I have to turn my light on. Where's my light? My light disappeared. This one. Let's see. Too small for me to read. Oh, there it is. It's got echinacea, propolis, hyssop. Hyssop is a demulcing. Sage, St. John's wort. Right, St. John's wort is good for herbal for nerve stuff, so it might actually work with calming down the nerve, the cough reflex.
Oh, sure. Right.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah. So I would say give those things a try. This one I couldn't find. Just go to Thrive Market, the Thrive Market online.
Oh, yeah.
Order it.
Yeah.
They may have it still at Amazon. I think the last time I looked on Amazon, they were low. So I ordered it from Thrive and I just ordered 6 bottles of it.
Yeah. Yeah. We got a Thrive order today. It took almost 2 weeks for it to get here.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yes.
This has been coming quickly.
Yeah, they're slower than anybody else.
We'll try Amazon first to see if you can find it there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, another thing I wanted to ask you about was something I came across in gene. This is a gene topic.
Okay.
You know, Donna Gates did the Genius of Your Genes Summit a couple months ago. And she said that she has a research study that shows that this is on the COMT gene, that if you have any SNPs in the COMT gene, and Donna has one, she's heterozygous, which is what I am. She says that olive oil is not good because it slows down that gene.
Mm.
And she said quercetin does the same thing. So I thought, whoa, you know, I do a lot of quercetin and I do some olive oil. And I wondered if you had, you know, heard anything along those lines.
I haven't, but I haven't read all the research. But here's my feeling about it. Olive oil is dispensable, right? And whenever there's one thing that does one thing and another thing that does another, we always have to do that risk-reward ratio, right? And the quercetin has been... you've been using that successfully for how long, right? It's been...
Yeah, well, it helps, you know, it certainly helps with histamine issues. That's
right.
That's the primary reason that I got on it, yeah.
Yeah. And so if you have a COMT, I have a heterozygous as well on COMT, double heterozygous, two different COMTs that are heterozygous. My feeling about that would be you've got to weigh the balance. Like what happens if you slow that gene down a little bit? Right. So, you know, it's related to dopamine and serotonin.
Right. Building up dopamine. Yeah. So that can make you more anxious, give you more sleep problems, which is what Donna was talking about that she has. She has sleep problems and feels she doesn't feel tired, you know, when it's time to go to bed. She feels wired. So anyway, I thought, well, you know, some of that sounds familiar.
Familiar, right? Yeah, and I mean, the only way to tell is to take a real good body inventory. Okay, this is how I feel. What? How would you rate your histamine issues? How would you rate, you know, how you feel after you eat certain foods? Do you break out? You know, like whatever. If it's at zero right now, or how is your congestion and all that? So you can look at that and then experiment by not doing quercetin for a week, and then see, and then I rate your mood, of course, and your sleep, and then in a week. If you look at it and go, okay, well, I'm sleeping better. Wow, okay. If there's no change in those other symptoms, then it's like, okay, this is great. I've got no increase in histamine symptoms, and I've got this great sleep. Then it's an easy answer, right?
Right.
If it's like a little bit of each or not sure, or if histamine reactions come back full blown and you can't sleep because you got these histamine reactions, right? Then they outweigh each other. So I think it's really like with anything, it's a matter of you read the research, you understand how it works, and then you just have to test it out on your own body.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I haven't heard that, but you know, Donna does extensive research and right. into that stuff. So, you know, that's not my primary focus. That's been her primary focus for a long time. Mm-hmm. Right. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, the other thing was, I don't remember if you and I talked about this at all or not, but you know, there's obviously thyroid issues here, which have really accelerated in the last year and a half to 2 years. Mm-hmm. And really it all started 3 years ago when I started Sweet Spot and started eliminating, you know, the starchy carbs, the lentils and the sweet potatoes and the brown rice and all of those, what we consider to be complex carbs. That's when my hair started thinning and all of these other, you know, things started to happen. And I thought, well, maybe I also reduced protein, which was obviously not a good idea. Mm-hmm. But in this last year, I've gotten the cold feet. I go to bed and my feet are just like frozen, and it's so bad that it can actually keep me from, you know, going to sleep. Mm-hmm. And I'm colder. I always used to be a super warm person, so I'm cold pretty much all the time anymore, and that is not me. So I've read over this last couple of years, so many practitioners talking about women and low carb and how it long-term, it can cause thyroid issues, and just not be as good for women as it works for men. So I'm thinking that, you know, that might be part of what's going on, because it certainly coincides with what I have done. Mm-hmm. And so I've decided to add in some things like butternut squash, which is, you know, a little mm-hmm. less blood sugar spiking than some of those other things. And the thing of it is, the other thing, sweet potato, and I'm not going to do brown rice, period. There's nothing that could convince me to do that. But beans, those are all high in ox, which I'm trying to minimize
right.
So I'm going to add in, try to do that to see if it makes any difference.
It makes a difference. I would also think about, like, for sweet potatoes, for sure. I've not seen people do it with butternut squash. Don't see any reason why you can't cook it, you know, cube it, put it in the fridge, and then eat it the next 24 hours later to create a resistant starch. Mm-hmm. So it won't raise your sugar as much, but it'll provide those carbohydrates.
Yeah.
So that might be an option as well. I mean, so, and you could test it. Somebody posted or spoke about on the call the other day was that, yeah, I tried the whole thing with potatoes, right? I tried and it still raises my blood sugar fine. Mm-hmm. So try it with the sweet potatoes and, you know, just see, try a sweet potato, just cook your sweet potato, enjoy it, and just see what it happens with it and play around with it. And maybe you can find this sweet spot, so to speak, with, you know, which, how much of these things you can add back in without, and help your thyroid without triggering excessive blood sugar swings.
Yeah. Well, you know, I understand that the gut and the liver are a big piece of the conversion, right. You know, from T4 to T3, and it's, you know, my T3 is just under optimal range, and my TSH, you know, is higher now than it was when I started Sweet Spot. I was more around 2 and now it's like 4. So it's higher than yeah. it should be. But understanding the gut piece, see, before I started Sweet Spot, I know I had gut issues, yeah. but I wasn't losing, you know, I wasn't losing hair. So this part of the whole thyroid picture, it just kind of seems to me to tie in with somehow with you know, protein, carbs, you know, mm-hmm. because I know inadequate protein can also be absolutely. A factor. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we've had issues with your absorption, so the stomach acid issue.
Exactly. Right.
And if you're having enough beforehand to overcompensate for the low stomach acid, then you're good to go. But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth a try. I think I would just do it in a very careful, experimental way, just to see, you know, and keep notes. Don't just think about it in your head, because
right. No, I write lots of things down. You know, I keep my poop journal and everything.
Yeah, keep it all and keep your coldness journal, right? Really sit with how cold are my fingers, right? On a scale of 1 to 10, like 10 is I just stuck them on ice and one is like, oh, they feel fine. Like really like sit with it and write down what your criteria is when you do a starting point and just watch that. You know, watch the hair. You can kind of quantify if you're collecting how much hair you lose in a day, right? You can take a picture of it.
And you can see. You know, I don't see the hair. It has been such a gradual process. And when you have short hair like I do, you don't see it.
Yeah, you don't see like these long strands.
You know, it goes down the drain, you know, and there's hardly anything in my comb. It's just been such a gradual process. So, yeah.
Yeah. So it's worth an experiment. I think the squash is less likely to, you know, I wouldn't experiment, like you said, with brown rice or with potatoes, but.
No interest in brown rice, but spaghetti squash is another, that's another good one.
Spaghetti squash tends to be in between. It's like, you know, in between zucchini and the butternut. It's in terms of starch content, it's not as high as butternut.
Right.
My favorite squash, I haven't had it in many years, is delicata squash.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, those are so good if you can find them. Yeah,
in the fall. Yeah.
In the fall, yeah. Yeah. Right. It's just a very short season, too, that they're available.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I would try the resistant starch. So first try it straight on. Test your blood sugar just to see what the variation is between the straight up and the resistant. And the resistant starch is going to be better for your gut anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, keep good notes and let's see how it goes.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. There's so many things, right? And we're all just this complicated mess of stuff. And it's a matter of finding the balance, right? You've done a great job of getting out all the junk. You did a great job of getting your weight down to your ideal weight. You've done a great job.
And then some.
And then some.
It's actually too low. Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, you're healthier than you were.
In some ways, for sure. Yes.
Yeah. 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 It's just a matter of pulling all and making all those puzzle pieces kind of fit together.
But is there any way to know for sure if your thyroid conversion problem is in the liver or in the gut?
I wish there was a way, because we just like, is it because of excess cortisol? Is it because of not enough cortisol? That you can look at. I mean, you can look at the numbers and see. Is that one-to-one that, oh yeah, it's low or high, then that's what it is. But then you've got the gut. I have the gut dysfunction. It's probably related there. Okay, I've had fatty liver. It's probably a composite of all of this stuff.
Yes.
And then you also have to look at the receptors, right? The receptor resistance, getting the homocysteine and any inflammation and cytokines and vitamin A, all those things that play in. And again, the cortisol levels, they all play into the receptors. So even if you had perfect numbers and you had symptoms, you know, we have to look at the receptors and the resistance at the receptor level.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
But the conversion, you know, it's not terrible. Your conversion was a little bit off optimal, right? But your TSH was creeping up. So yeah, that's got to be looked at. And TSH can creep up from blood sugar imbalance too. Although your blood sugar is better, you know, your hemoglobin A1C and your insulin and all those things are way better.
That's just it. My blood sugar was higher when my TSH was lower. So it's like, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Things don't match up the way we would expect.
Yeah. We should.
I'm special like Diane. You know, they're always telling me, the doctors over the years, I've never seen this before. You know, the doctors, the dentists, I have heard this numerous times. And I'm like, well, I have been brought here to give you an education, obviously.
That's right.
I've said that more than once. Yes.
Yeah. Well, like Heather, I said that to her earlier, right? I don't know what's, I've never seen estriol too high. Everybody I've ever seen has estriol too low.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, I don't know of any, and I'll look to see if I see any, but on the brief search I did when I asked you, I'm like, there's nothing talking about problems that estradiol is safe and high levels are okay. But it would seem that when there's like 20 times what it should be, we want to make sure, right? And try to bring it more into balance. So yeah, you guys are all special. That's why you're here. Everybody else that's not so special is out there eating Twinkies and running around like nothing's wrong.
And not getting sick either from the virus. That's one of the things.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of people who are.
There
are a lot of people who are. But, you know, there's some people who just genetically are so strong that, you know, and people ask me, does anybody have all green? I'm like, I've never seen them, but I only see people who are having problems. I don't see people come in and say, do you run my genetics? I'm fine. Everything's perfect. I'm 97 and I'm running around like a, you know, crazy person. I've never looked at those people's genetics. Why?
Yeah.
They don't land in my environment.
Well, you know, Tom is an interesting case in point here. He has no spleen. So that, you know, he's immunocompromised because of that. But when I got so sick, he got a really, really mild version of what I had that lasted 3 days. But he grew up on a farm. He was exposed constantly to, you know, all this great bacteria.
Right.
He never had antibiotics growing up. Never had antibiotics growing
That's
up.
That's rare.
He was hardly ever sick.
Yeah.
And in the 48 years that he worked in the tire factory where he was exposed to all kinds of stuff, he hardly ever, probably not more than 5 times did he ever get sick in that 48 years. So, you know, it's interesting. Yeah.
That's a big piece of it. And most people, like you also asked, if he grew up in that environment, his mom probably didn't take antibiotics while she was pregnant with him.
But she smoked. She smoked and his dad smoked. So he was exposed.
Oh my.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. There's no one-to-one correlation.
So it's interesting.
Yeah. That is interesting. Because I grew up in that smoking environment, but I had antibiotics.
I did too. My dad smoked.
But that does make a difference in immunity later on and the risk factor for autoimmune disease. Yeah. And asthma and all the other, the A's, atopic and all that. Yeah. Okay. Well, let us know how the experiment goes.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
How do I have leave meeting when I'm able to do recordings? That's weird. When it says leave meeting, I'm not the host. Yes.